Doug Harsh, Scott Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket. Open lines, 248-539-9797. Feedback, I believe nobody wants to play for Eisenman. That's what I'm thinking at this point. That's from Nico and Livonia. It was a terrible year for free agency. There's not much Steve could do there. That's from an unnamed texter. I know they're two separate entities owned by the same family, but the Tigers didn't blink twice and moved on from Alan Trammell. Why the over-admiration of Eisenman? Well, I'd have to go back and look at Trammell's timeline, but it feels like Eisenman took him from awful to this. And I don't think Trammell was on his way towards this.
When Alan Trammell was manager?
When he got fired.
Alan Trammell was given no resources to work with. He had a real tough time. I believe it was during the transition of Randy Smith to Dave Dombrowski, and they had just made those moves to go get in the offseason. We had 1 year with Fernando Vina, Rondell White, and Pudge Rodriguez.
Yeah.
As I recall that season with Pudge Rodriguez in 2005, not exactly a team player. Something happened, and I believe it was in Toronto, or was he in the lineup, was he out of the lineup, and he just didn't come across as being this team guy. And it kind of had a little power struggle there. Tram lost the power struggle. They then went and threw in an interim manager at the time, and then they went hiring Jim Leland the next year, and things obviously changed dramatically. But they also changed dramatically because they took more chances. They had gotten Magaly Ordóñez. You know, they promoted Justin Verlander and Joel Zamaya, and they added Kenny Rogers. It was more of a team that he had. Alan Trammell was not done any favors by the organization in terms of the team that they handed him. It was a tough way to get introduced into managing Major League Baseball when you're not given any resources.
Let's get back to your open line calls. We go to Larry. You're on 97 on a ticket. What's up, Larry?
Hey, guys. I've kind of stewed on this for about a week, the Red Wing stuff, and just thinking about it, you guys let me know if this makes sense. I'll make two points. I'll start with the less important of the two. I was at an age, when the Red Wings were in their heyday winning cups, I think they made 6 or 8 conference finals in, 15 or 16 years, whatever it was. And so I look at the franchise like this. I don't get too exercised about draft picks and, what Steve's doing on a month-to-month or even within, a season. I kind of look at the team structurally. And so the less important of the two, the first thing, in a town like Detroit where the fans and the media have reverence for an original six franchise, a historic franchise, obviously it's the 100th anniversary, you can win in this town, you can lose in this town, but what you can't beat is boring. And the Red Wings are boring. From their ownership, to the executives, to the coach, to the guys on the club, boring. I mean, there's a reason people know who Darren McCarty is 20 years later. It's because he represented what Detroit is, and people could identify with him. He wasn't a boring player, and they didn't have...
Well, it was a Stanley Cup winning team that he was part of. Darren McCarty was never part of a bad Red Wing team. So, and it's a different era of hockey as well. They don't play that style of hockey anymore. So, what was your other point?
Fair point, but the other the bigger point is this: for about 20 years, I think between 1990, I'll say between 1990.
Hey, real quick, Larry, we got others we want to get to. So you're
okay. Yeah. So they were best in class for 20 years.
Yep.
That means ownership, executives, all the way up and down the line. It's a pretty big coincidence if all of Steve's ex-teammates are best in class. The guys running this team are not best in class, and that's what they need to change. So it's not about one window or two. So that's what I wanted to say.
Okay. He's just playing the support staff?
Maybe.
Okay, and as far as the boring thing's concerned, boring is just another word for losing. I mean, I think it sounds good in theory.
Well, it's
and the guy knew it. You could tell the guy goes way back with the Red Wings, there's nothing. There's very little exciting about losing. You can have interesting personalities. I mean, Darren McCarty, with all respect, if he were on this team, he'd make a difference. But they still wouldn't be contending. I don't.
It's different hockey. Yeah. The thing is, even before the Red Wings won Stanley Cups, when they were an awful team, going back to the mid-80s, when they were an awful team, yeah, you can say that they weren't boring because Probert and Kosar were fighting every other shift. You know, both guys had over 300 minutes in penalties, and they were, you know, crazy totals. And yeah, it was a terrible hockey team that ended up with the top pick overall in 1986 because how bad they were in the 85-86 season. But things did change, but NHL changed. I mean, that kind of hockey isn't around anymore.
You get about 1 year of being bad but young and exciting. You get about 1 year of, okay, look at all these young guys. They're going to be really good. But you don't get much longer than that before you have to win. The direct correlation between winning and entertainment is, it's not complicated. It's a straight line.
Yeah, nobody knows what the timeline is with Chris Ilitch, but Red Wing fans have their own timeline. You know, and some of those people, Yzerman has crossed it, and they're done with him. And I get that. And for me, it's going to take another year of missing the playoffs before I'm in that same spot. We'll see what they add to this team. How they perform in March is going to be huge. You know, are they going to collapse again? Are they even in a position to make the playoffs at that point? We won't know. It's going to take months before that happens. But right now, not terribly encouraged by what they have going into the season being that much better than what they had. I think they're slightly better, but I'm sure a lot of teams think that they're better than they were last year too.
Jake is next on 97.1. Hello, Jake.
Howdy, fellas.
What's up?
Hey, I wanted to put in my votes for Champ and Chump.
Yep.
My first vote for Champ is Zach McKinstry because his base running yesterday was just amazing. And my chump for is Emmanuel Classe for blowing it again against the Tigers. I just think we're in this guy's head, and I love it.
You know, it's weird because he was so close to getting out of that. He was so close, and it felt like the Tigers were in trouble. It's not like Parker Meadows is hitting the cover off the ball, but they managed to get McKinstry as a pinch runner around a third with a stolen base and the review, and then the hit behind the runner, and he gets to third, and there's two outs. Classe was right there. Right there.
Oh, I thought we were out for sure, but then I was audibly screaming when they got it that run.
Yeah, no, it was incredible. And then they get to extra innings, and the Tigers just unload on Cade Smith. Absolutely unload. 248-539-9797. Ken is in Howell, and on 97 won the ticket. What's up, Ken?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
What's up?
I've been listening to all your, not just your program, but everybody else. And the one thing that doesn't come up in the Red Wings conversations, and I apologize if it did and I missed it, but we did have a coaching change last year. And even though he is a better coach, he still needs time to develop his system and his team. So I don't know if that was put in the equation.
Well, Ken, that's something that was brought up last week. We have not brought that up today, and I'm glad you did, because the biggest change for the Wings going into the season is that they've got Todd McClellan as the head coach. And, you know, would Todd McClellan have made a 3 or 4 win difference last year if he was coaching the team in the first half of the season, the first 30 games, whatever it was, before they fired Nuzzi? Probably. He may have. And if they did, they'd be a playoff team. But things kind of level out. Todd McClellan was great. They had those 2 7-game win streaks early on in his tenure. But then March happened, and it happened under his watch. So the Red Wings have a March problem, and that's an organizational problem. They have to figure that out. Why is it that they have these collapses? And you don't want to make excuses for anything. Is it an actual problem with the way the team is constructed, or is it just happenstance?
It seems like too much of a coincidence that every year in March, the last several years in March have been really rough for them, right as we get to the trade deadline. 248-539-9797. Hey, Sarah Chevrolet in Sterling Heights is bringing the heat with these sizzling summer deals. Lease a new 2026 Trailblazer LS for just $239 a month for 36 months with $1,999 down. $239 a month for a 26 model year Trailblazer. All you need to activate this deal is a GM employee discount. Don't forget, Sarah Chevrolet And Sterling Heights is your number one volume Chevy dealer in Michigan. That means they have a huge inventory of Silverados, Equinox, Blazers, and Trax, and EVs, hundreds to choose from. Take advantage of these sizzling summer savings now and say Sarah. Call 87-SAY-SARAH or go to saysarah.com. Together, let's drive. See dealer for details and get there fast. By the way, Gator, the Vegas total is out for the Detroit Pistons. Last year, the total before the season was set by betonline.ag at 24.5. And the Pistons finished with 44 wins.
That's the overhitting on that one.
Yes. They also, year to year, have gone from 24.5 to their new total going into the 25-26 NBA season. The new total is 45.5, a jump of 21 games from year to year, which is the largest in the National Basketball Association. Are you feeling chesty about them going over 45.5?
I am, because of the landscape of the Eastern Conference. Because I don't think, I think there's more parity now than what we've seen. That the higher end teams may not, that they're going to come down a little bit. And teams like Detroit might go up just a touch. So I think the Pistons can absolutely threaten 50 wins and maybe get more so. I mean, if I were to bet on it, I would take the over at this point.
Well, if you look at who the Pistons became by the end of the year, they weren't that team all season long. Now, it's not always, the arrow doesn't always go up and up and up and up. But it's not bold to think that they will start this coming season in better shape than they were the previous season. Additionally, did Boston lose a key piece or two?
Oh, yeah.
Did Indiana lose a key piece?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, if they won 44 a year ago with a crappy start and a tougher East, yeah, I like the over here. Now, I always get leery of the fact that I almost always like the over for our local team. So, I get it. It's designed in a way that hometown fans are going to bet the over and everybody else is going to bet the under. But
sure, but trying to be as objective as possible.
It feels really logical to think they're going to go over 45.5. Two more wins than last year.
You tell me this team has to deal with just minor injuries the whole season, nothing major, where nobody's missing 25 games or more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the over total on that because I think this team is going to do some pretty good things with a healthy Jaden Ivey next to a healthy Cade Cunningham and have guys like Asar Thompson and Ron Holland play bigger roles and having them for the whole season. I like that. We'll see what the Pistons decide to do with this newly found cap space after a sign and trade with Schroeder.
Yeah.
But they got a number of candidates they can go out and get and improve the 3-point shooting if that's what they want to do. If they want to improve the size up front, they could do that. They've got a number of ways they can go, but I think there's addition by subtraction in some ways with this team.
All right. So you said on your show sheet you think you might have a problem with a new TV show.
Well, I've gone about this a strange way, right? This is a show that's no longer on TV, but it's something that I discovered while watching TV on Sunday evenings. Like after the Tigers are done, like Tigers have a 1 o'clock game or whatever, and I'd start flipping through channels, and the show comes on at like 5 o'clock, and they have back-to-back episodes at 5 and at 6. And this is also a show that has done an amazing job of promoting itself and marketing itself on Reels and on TikTok, where I would watch these little two-minute snips of it. I'm going, this looks like an interesting show. I never watched it before. And then I started catching it at 5 and 6 o'clock. And I believe it had like 9 seasons.
Wow.
I caught a couple episodes from maybe the first season and then a couple of episodes in the third season. And then lately, I caught, I think, four episodes in a row from season 5. And yesterday, it actually got to the point on Saturday where I'm getting ready to go out for the night, and it's on. I'm like, you know what? I want to see this. I recorded it. And then I thought I had set up a recording to record the ones on Sunday as well because I'm watching the Tigers and want to watch the golf, but I don't want to miss the show. And it turns out after the golf was done, I had come home I was at my mom's for a little bit last night, and I'm like, all right, there's nothing on TV. Why don't I go back and watch the show? And I realized it didn't record because it's set up for only new shows. But fortunately, the show's on Netflix. So instead of starting at episode one, season one, I simply picked up where I left off season five, episode 14 or something like that. And I watched like three episodes last night back to back to back. And now it's like 1 o'clock, 1:30 in the morning last night. I got to go to bed. I can't do this, even though I'm dying to see the next episode.
Well, Kang, you have any idea, any guesses of what this show might be?
I'm racking my brain back here, man. I have no idea.
And you say it was nine seasons long?
Nine seasons. And yeah, it went away. And then they brought up a new version of it, but shipped it off to the West Coast. The show takes place in New York, but now they have it over on the West Coast, okay, although it did not make the cut. I think it was they had like eight episodes and it got canceled.
Okay, I'm out. I got no idea. Kenny, you're shaking your head. Do you have any idea? No.
We need some clues here, Doug. Well, I don't think they'll help you, but it might help me.
Yeah,
and Kenny.
It might help you. The idea that it went from East Coast to West Coast.
That helps a little bit.
Well, I know it's not.
How about like?
I know it's not The Walking Dead, which kind of did that, but it was more south to the west.
Done with that show.
Can I get the initials of the lead actor?
I can give it to you, but I mean, I didn't know who this guy was.
Oh man, you didn't know who
he was? I had to start going back and look at his other movies he was in. He was in bit parts in other movies that I went, he was that guy in that movie? Okay.
I'm gonna look in here and see if there's any feedback coming in.
I mean, GM are the initials of the lead character on the show. In fact, there's one person and the actual cast, I guess it's kind of famous, but not for acting.
All right, I see some guesses coming in. Are you done, Kang, or should I read what has come in?
Yeah, I'm done.
There's an actress on the show who's way more famous for outside of her acting career.
Who is it?
Meghan Markle.
Oh, I know what show this is.
And?
Suits?
Suits.
Okay. Suits.
Somebody told me I had to watch Suits, and I put on the first episode, and after about 2.5 minutes, I'm like, nope, which is terrible. There's no commitment, but I found, you know, like the first scene in Severance, I was hooked.
Wow.
Yep.
I was not hooked. I like it now, but I was definitely not hooked until 2.5 episodes into it.
Okay, so is your problem that you're starting in the middle?
The problem is, yeah, who watches a show like this? It's actually like you need to see stuff that happened in previous episodes to understand. Like I understand the whole...
I completely got everything that was going on in Endgame, and I didn't watch any of the 17 movies before.
I didn't see Infinity
that.
War or any of that. You didn't watch Captain America or you know. Any of that stuff. Or Civil War. I got you. Yeah. No, you didn't do any of that stuff. And with this show, like, again, it's because of watching on reels. This happened like a couple of years ago. These things just kept coming up in my feed. And they were like whole scenes. And I'm watching the whole scene. Like, what's up with the show? And this is interesting. I never heard of this show. That's my own
maybe
fault.
Maybe I need to start watching in the middle of the... Because I didn't...
I find it damned interesting.
Do you?
And I'm also frustrated with it because bothers me that I find a law show interesting. It's like finding it's just so precious. Another law show or another show that takes place in a hospital. You know, I'd be really upset with myself if I fell for, you know, one of these medical shows. You know, they're all the same. And so the legal shows were all the same too. It's just a different scene. You know, whether you're in L.A. Law or Boston Legal, there were great shows.
Yeah,
Suits is also a great show. They took it to L.A., had Suits L.A. that came out last year and completely flopped.
Did it?
Yeah, because they didn't have any of the cast members on that show. I think they kept waiting for the main character on this show to make his way over to L.A., and by the time that episode was going to air, like nobody cared. But this show, I'm watching it. I'm interested.
So you even know that it ends poorly, but you're sticking with it.
Well, it ends poorly in that they're going to go to L.A. or whatever, but I'm watching this now. I want to see what happened, you know, in Mike's trial. I want to know. And I want to know how ridiculous it is, because it's ridiculous. A premise that a guy.
Spoilers?
Yeah, I think we're fine with it. Because I don't know what happens with him
okay.
yet. But, I mean, if you watch the show on the first, you'll know right away that there's a guy in the show who, you know, faked his way through law school at Harvard Law because he's got a photographic memory. He's one of these guys. And, you know, it's basically Goodwill Hunting, but he's, you know, a different setting, you know. But he gets hired by a law firm that only hires people from Harvard Law, and he faked his way through the whole thing.
Okay, so he's like Wine Guy.
Kind of.
Wine Guy who called our show and said, do you know how many he faked his way and got a job selling wine, and he completely faked his way through the interview. And then he said, do you know how many kinds of wine there are? You know, red, white, whatnot.
Well, the difference is that this guy in the show, he does know the law. He's incredibly bright, and you know, he would make an excellent lawyer and is making an excellent lawyer and all this, but you know, it's a ridiculous premise that, okay, if you had the kind of brain, go to law school.
Well, I'm not going to watch Suits because tomorrow Quarterback starts on Netflix and I'm all in for that. Tomorrow. Yeah.
Okay.
Woo. With our guy, Jared Goff.
Well, I'm going to get home and watch the end of season 5.
If you haven't seen Quarterback or Receiver on Netflix, it's basically a year behind the scenes with several NFL players. We had Amon-Ra last year in receiver, and this year we got Goff on quarterback.
No.
And it debuts tomorrow.
Plus, the woman who plays Donna on this show is smoking hot. So there's that.
Well, I'll just watch Quarterback. It is Carson Anderson, 97.1 The Ticket. All right, so Tigers back in action tonight following their sweep of the Cleveland Guardians. What a fun weekend that was. And yeah, look, they didn't score a ton of runs. They did score a ton of runs the series before, but dropped 2 of 3 against Washington. You know, and there's a little bit of hand-wringing going on amongst Tiger fans about the offense. But at this point, best record in baseball, huge lead in the division. They got an interesting series coming up with Tampa. That first series with Tampa, played in the Yankees minor league park in a game that, or a series that was really weird for Detroit. I don't think it was an excuse. I think excuses are when people bring up stuff that have nothing to do with anything as to why a team looked lethargic or didn't play well. The Tigers had come off that marathon, like 12-hour day at Comerica Park, flew to Tampa, landed at, you know, 4 a.m., got on the field, lost, turned around and had to play the next day at noon, lost that game too, came back and won the Sunday game. Tampa's been relatively hot in that they are now tied for, although they've lost four, they've won only 4 of their last 10, but they're tied now with the Yankees for second place behind the Blue Jays in the American League East. It's a good Tampa team. And Tigers coming home here, a little home stretch leading into the All-Star game with two teams that can be a problem. One is Tampa, the other is Seattle. But we don't know who's... they haven't announced yet who's starting for the Tigers tonight, right? This has bullpen day, opener, and then like ends being the bulk guy written all over it.
Well, according to ESPN, Cader Montero is going to start.
My apologies then.
I just looked that up because I hadn't seen anything up until a while. I haven't seen anything. I hadn't checked it in a while, but as of this morning, they didn't name a starter. Now apparently it's Cader Montero.
Okay, great. So, what do you make of this series here?
I think it's you're taking on a pretty good Rays team, and they're 8 games above 500. Tigers have a bad taste in the mouth from when they played down there, but they're back home. I'm sure they're looking forward to playing in front of the hometown fans, playing the best baseball they played, 23 games above 500. But I do think this will be a test for them. They're going to face at least two pitchers that beat them when they played in Tampa. So what did they learn from those guys?
Yeah. So, look, the series with Cleveland, the starting pitching was fantastic. And the bullpen work was really good. And the way that they scrapped and clawed, found a way to get a run here, a run there, just enough to win that series was great. It's not always going to be good enough. I mean, yeah, they put up 6 in extra innings, but they spent the first 27 innings of that series, scored 4 runs. I'm not worried about the offense yet. Seeing the feedback coming in, there does appear to be some concern developing from the fans. I think it would have to be bad for more than a week because seasons have so many ebbs and flows. But I'm not looking to fix anything or that concerned for quite some time yet.
Yeah, I mean, if I'd probably go longer than a week because I just think this team has been resilient. They'll be able to bounce back. But there's plenty of time. You've got three full weeks and then some before the trade deadline. So if you feel the need to fortify with a bat, you can do that. But the bigger concern or the bigger priority for this team, in my mind, is adding to the bullpen. If they can bring up Alex Lang this week, great. But I think they need another back-end bullpen arm. Somebody can strike guys out. Somebody who throws in the high 90s or reaches triple digits. I'd like to see that. It's possible they need another starter. I mean, it's great to have four guys in a rotation. Be better to have five. Like we said today, Keydon Montero gets another start. He's pitched okay. He's got a 4.0 ERA with the Tigers. That's okay for your fifth starter. I take it, but if you can find somebody else out there that's way more consistent, can give you 6 to 7 innings every time he goes out there, go find that guy if you can. That'd be another area I'd look. But the bat to the lineup is the last among my priorities, and it's not something that I'm just going to totally say you don't do it. You do it, but I got to address these other things first.
If you told me going into this season, well, there's a whole bunch of stuff that if you told me going into this season, I wouldn't believe. But one of the biggest of which is if you told me going into the season that two guys that they expected to be in their starting rotation would be out, and Alex Cobb and Jackson Jobe, the last thing I would have expected is for this team to be 13 and a half games up in the division. The last thing I would have expected for them to have the best record in baseball. Last thing I expected for the pitching to actually be pretty good. Now, I guess Cobb, we always sort of raised our eyebrows a bit suspicious as to the signing and whether or not it would provide dividends for this team. But, you know, we say about Brad Holmes, and I'll say it again here, I don't expect them to be perfect. It's just as the net-net of what management's doing, producing a winning team, and clearly it is doing that right here, right now. And so as we sit today, pretty pleased with what's going on. The Zach McKinstry story yesterday, I mean, he only played in the last two innings of the game. Came into the top of the ninth as a pitch runner. Stole second, got to third on a ground ball, and then swiped home when he got a great jump, huge lead and a great jump on a pass ball that didn't look like it should produce a run. It just trickled away, and he scored easily. Then he moves to first base for the first time in his career. Borrows Torque's glove, apparently, and tosses it back to him afterwards, but makes a couple of plays in the field in the bottom of the ninth. And was there in the 10th as well. Pretty amazing story. And there's some people who are disappointed he didn't make the All-Star team. He might. He might because Alex Bregman, the guy that said no to Detroit, might be hurt and probably is hurt. And they're probably going to have to find a replacement. Wouldn't it feel like some sort of sweet justice if it was Zach McKinstry?
Delicious irony. The whole thing. And the other thing I find wildly impressive with Zach McKinstry about that sequence, he's brought in the pinch run. Everyone in the ballpark knows he's going to try to steal second base.
Yeah.
It's amazing when you can do that while everybody knows you're going to go. And the catcher got a great throw down to second base, but McKinstry had a better jump and just barely beat out that throw to steal the base and put himself in scoring position. And then, fortunately, a couple batters later, takes advantage of Jose Ramirez playing basically in the outfield grass, just at the back of the dirt, and playing well off of third base, allowing McKinstry to take a lead. It's like halfway down the line, so that he can jump on a situation if the pitch is in the dirt, and pitch got away from the catcher, wasn't far, 8 mm-hmm. feet, maybe 10 feet, didn't matter. McKinstry was able to sprint across easy.
Yeah, well, his value to this team, it's not lost on Detroit fans. I've said this before on the air, but I'll say it again for those who haven't heard it. I think basically almost every sports market is the same with little subtleties here and there. And I think the one thing that's unique to Detroit is we love a role player. We love a guy that does all the little things that helps a team win, and I think we treat them like absolute superstars. And Zach McKinstry, You, sir, are the next one. 248-539-9797. Something just happened, and I wonder how much it's going to resonate with our audience. We'll get to that today at 146 here on Carson Anderson on 97.1 The Ticket. Okay, so one of the things we try and do here is talk to the people about what they are talking about. That's why we went to open lines years ago and just kind of followed the lead and don't do a whole lot of guests anymore here and there occasionally. So we try and, you know, pay attention to what really is moving the needle. How much do you think this Ben Shelton, the U.S. tennis player, and I want to guess say if anybody's taping Wimbledon today and want to watch it later today, spoiler alert, because matches going on now just ended, in fact.
Just don't spoil the Tour de France.
No, I won't do that.
Thank you.
Was it stage? Anyway, Ben Shelton's an American. An American hasn't made it to the semifinals of Wimbledon since 2000. To the finals of Wimbledon since 2009. Last American to do it was Andy Roddick. And he went three times, 04, 05, and 09. The last American to win the singles, the gentlemen's championship, or whatever the hell they call it, at Wimbledon, was Pete Sampras in 2000. It is 2025. Now, I kind of like international sports where we can truly say we're the underdog. And, you know, I watched soccer last night. We were an underdog against Mexico, and we lost. Ben Shelton, and again, we gave you the spoiler alert, he just won to advance to the semifinals. The semifinals or quarterfinals? He's at the quarterfinal level at Wimbledon. And I'm wondering how much this could move the needle for Americans, because we haven't had a men's tennis player make it to the finals in over 15 years, and we haven't won it in 25 years. The women, Venus and Serena, Coco Gauff, we've seen success. And Shelton has made it to the semifinals in a couple tournaments, and been to the U.S. Open and Wimbledon. I don't know. I find this guy to be interesting. His girlfriend is Trinity Rodman. His sister just started a new job. At where was it? Where did she get her job?
Morgan Stanley.
And she had to go back. And he publicly pleaded from somebody at Morgan Stanley to give her more time off so she can stay and watch him play. And they had granted it. So that's become sort of this human interest story. I mean, we don't try to lie to the audience. We're not big tennis guys. You're not interested in all, are you?
Oh, keep going. Don't stop. You're on a roll. You're speaking for all of us.
Well, if he wins, he plays the number one player in the world in the quarterfinals, which is this Jannik Sinner. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Sinner, Sinner.
Sinier.
Could be.
Sinner.
Sinner. Could it be Sinner? I don't know.
Sinner. I don't know.
Well, maybe it'll take him winning this and then another major or more tournaments, you know, because...
Is it Grand Slam?
Yeah, the Grand Slams. When was tennis most popular here in America? Like when it was Agassi and Sampras? I don't know, you know?
Maybe in the early 80s when you had McEnroe, Borg, and Jimmy Connors and that group, but it could be later on. It's hard to gauge it.
But it was at one point, right? People cared in America, I think.
Some people will always care, right? But you're asking when it was biggest. I don't know when it was biggest.
Or at least the latest, like, which is maybe Sampras in 2000. But he was a quiet, reserved winner, champion. Shelton, you already mentioned he's dating Rodman's daughter. You know, he's younger. I think this generation is more flashy in general, right? There's social media now. There wasn't back then. I don't know if tennis can ever be maybe what it was, but can it be better than what it is for Americans?
I mean, if he makes it to the finals, by the end of the week, I'm sure we'll mention this again.
Mm-hmm.
And will there be some interest to watch Breakfast at Wimbledon and see him compete for a championship? Sure.
Can you say it regularly? Like, Doug, you can't, right?
No, he's got to go into a snooty voice.
Yes.
He literally cannot say it without.
I didn't say Breakfast at Wimbledon. I didn't say that.
Damn close.
Yeah, so you have your crumpets and tea for breakfast at Wimbledon. I did not say that. That was not.
You didn't go that far, no. It was very subtle.
Yeah, it's just, you know.
But it was definitely, you had a slight accent when you said it.
It's just a different affect. But I mean, no, I don't care. Because I'm not a tennis guy. I just don't care. Now, could there be some interest later on? Like I said, if this guy is going to play in a final, there's a likelihood that I could be flipping through channels and stop on it for a minute, a little bit, to see how he's doing. But generally speaking, no. But right now, it feels like we're in a transition here in tennis, where we've moved on from the Roger Federer phase and
apparently we're in the Yannick Sinner era. And,
but that guy's played like five straight majors or majors, Grand Slam events, or whatever the number is. But no, I don't care.
Okay.
I'm just being honest.
No, it's all right. But like I said, we don't try to be something we're not. But the other thing that caught my eye this weekend is a story on Front Office Sports about how attendance, ratings, and fan interest are higher for Major League Baseball. Things are pointing up. And a few things are being cited as to the reasons why. I think it's clearly Zach McKinstry. No. It's pitch clock. It's banning the shift. Like, I was watching that game yesterday, and I do this probably once or twice a week, where I'm just watching the pitcher work and work and work, and I'm just like, thank God for the pitch clock. I love the pitch clock. And I don't think it's impacted the game negatively in any way. And do you remember the pushback over the idea of a pitch clock and the limited number of throws over to first and how that was going to ruin the essence of the game?
I don't remember many people saying that.
I remember it being said.
I don't think that was prevailing opinion. People said it, but I don't think that was like, you know, the majority of people were like, oh, let's not do that.
Yeah.
The majority of people were like, yeah, you speed it up. Absolutely. Let's go.
And we got some calls on it.
Yeah. Was it the baseball purist, you know, those people that probably adhere to the, I'm not going to vote for this guy for the first time Hall of Famer because you're not supposed to get in with 100% vote.
Sure.
Those people are losers.
I agree with you.
There's Mike Valeni who just said, please, is it the tennis talk that brought you in?
No.
Oh.
Is that what's going on?
Well, we just mentioned, and you know, spoiler, but.
How's Andre Agassi doing?
Yeah, okay. Well, then you're not into Ben Shelton yet.
I don't know who that is.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Chris Shelton's child.
We haven't had a U.S. man win at Wimbledon.
Okay.
Since 2000.
Who the hell was that?
Pete Sampras.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. The eyebrows.
And we haven't had a U.S. man play for Wimbledon's championship since 2009.
Andy Roddick.
Andy Roddick. Yes.
Okay.
He did it.
Come
three
on,
times.
I'm redeeming myself.
Yes, you are.
And where's Malavea Washington?
Right. Well,
no, I'm out.
Vetus Gerolaitis.
Wasn't he Swartz Creek's own Mal Washington?
Yes, actually, he was.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, you know, I thought maybe you heard that and wandered in because edumacate us, but all right, fair enough.
No, I have three thoughts. Two-thirds are serious, and one-third is kind of like stoking the flames a little bit.
Okay.
But I walked away from this weekend's Tigers series with a potentially irrational and bold declaration.
And okay.
I think it can be both.
Okay.
But if you know anything, whether you agree with my opinions or not, I don't do hot takes. I do things I can back up. And it doesn't mean they're right. And it doesn't mean people will agree. But I have something here.
So we have a rule on the show. I don't know if you've ever applied this. We call it the hunch.
The hunch.
Don't have to back up anything.
It's just the hunch.
No. This is different than that. Okay, this has merit. This has support. I have reasons.
You're reading your own tea leaves, coming up with your own hypothesis.
Yeah, and Gator, I know what I'm going to do is irresponsible. And by the way, it's all positive. There's nothing snarky about this. It just, things became crystal clear to me. I want to lay out the three things at the start. We'll get to the Scooble and the All-Star snubs that weren't later. And then we've got to talk Elliot Friedman, who apparently now Steve is up on the cross. Poor Steve, nobody wants to be here. Then be better at your job. We'll do that a little bit later because I got to tell you. Hey, are you, oh, by the way, real quick, how pumped are you for Erik Karlsson and his Lego feet?
What a great line.
Well, they're shattered. They're like Malcolm Brogdon.
So I'm not pumped about anything.
I know. That's what sucks, doesn't it?
Yep.
But ultimately, and this has part of been my pitch with this, look, Detroit's not an excuse for Scott Harris. They damn near landed Alex Bregman. And you go, oh, almost. Guys, the team that got him paid him more than Aaron Judge. You can't compete with that. Like, Trajan Langdon walked through the door. He got people to come here, and you won. Steve, in year seven, either the product is so unexciting players don't want to be here, or you, who are viewed, per Hockey Insiders, as a nightmare to deal with by agents, you're not good at your job right now. So I want to have a conversation. Let Elliot Friedman's words speak. Gator's burning a hole through my skull right now.
No, I said earlier that it's been so disappointing with how this rebuild has gone. And you know, I'm still willing to let this offseason continue to be an offseason where there's potential for a trade. But if they don't trade, if there's no trade coming, and you're just stockpiling all this cap space for what? For the trade deadline?
I could have hired anyone to do that. That's my point.
Yeah,
and Yzerman
but
is
not
good
everybody
at,
would, but he's done a good job of drafting.
Absolutely.
So,
but
not
Gator, you know
that.
What it is now. In 2025, it is a comprehensive, whether you are the GM, I can't believe, I'm going to throw up saying this, and Doug will too, whether you're the GM of a college football team or the GM of the Boston Red Sox or anything in between, it has to be a comprehensive approach if you're going to be serious about winning. Now, if you're like some of these AL Central teams, who are we kidding? They just sit there.
Okay, so you're opening with...
I'm doing the Tiger. I have three Tiger declarations.
Okay.
And they're all good. There's nothing bad, I promise. But I really believe in the third one, and I don't think I'm going to get any support. It might be too positive.
Wow.
I know.
All right.
Just work with
it. All right, no, I look forward to this. That's is good. Next. Good to see you, Mike. Have a great day, everyone, and treat each other with respect. 97.1.